Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. You are about to listen to the Dork Forest. Let's give you the info about it. First of all, you know the websites. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, if you like a determiner, JackieCation.com has everything. All of my podcasts, including videos of my stand-up schedule, merchandise you can purchase if you would like, and a lot more info than you possibly even need. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg sang and produced and composed that song at the beginning of the show. He sang with his wife, Sarah. It's very beautiful. At the end of the program, he sings his version of the Mexican Hat Dance. That's Mike Rickberg. Vilmos fixes JackieCation.com. He is the web designer over there. And Patrick Brady fixes the audio. And in this case, there's a video intro. Very exciting. Anyway, those are the websites. If you want to support the show, you're doing it already by listening to it or watching it. And another way is to tell your friends and family, go on iTunes, do a review. Another way is to just give me money. Yeah. You could go use the donate button. You can make it even monthly if you're okay with making things monthly. You do a PayPal monthly. There's a monthly choice on PayPal. The PayPal is a button on the Jackie Cation or the Dork Forest website, and it goes directly to me. Thank you very much. I will use it wisely or foolishly. Your call as well. Now, my email address, jackie@jackiecation.com, is where you can contact me if you have any questions or concerns and about the Dork Forest. And I do have a Venmo account. It's jackie-cation, oddly enough. Another way to support the show is on dorkforest.com and jackiecation.com. There's an Amazon link. And the Amazon link just takes you to Amazon. You order like normal, and it supports the show because you came from Jackie Cation or dorkforest.com. Very exciting. Other than that, there is a Bandcamp. You can, if you have listened to all the episodes that are free and you need more content, there are several live episodes that are at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. And those cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge a couple of bucks. There's also a storytelling album there that you can listen to some stories that I did live. And there are 17 free episodes before the Dork Forest was pre-recorded. So the audio isn't very good, but the guests were super funny and fun and dorky. So if you want to do that, go to thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. Other than that, let's see if there are other things that I should be talking about. Possibly the merch. Yeah, if you want to buy merch. The only other thing I want to talk about is the merch. You can get Dork Forest t-shirts, and you can get stand-up comedy t-shirts. You can get my albums or my DVD over at jackiecation.com/merch. There's pins, there's a challenge coin, there's a bunch of new things happening over there. Anyway, a lot of information. I don't think I've missed anything, but who cares? Let's get into the show.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room. Actually, I'm not. I'm in the tiny room with the Hot Wheels. And with me is Jason Weems. We've never met. This is it. It's happening.
Right. Welcome. Here. Hey, Jay.
Welcome to the Dork Forest, where we... now, Jason Weems, you should know, is at Jason Weems Comedy on Instagram and Jay Weems Comedy on Twitter. And I will put the links in the thing. You have a new hour that just dropped on Amazon. Comedy album.
Yes.
Album and video. The video's on Amazon called Unknown, and the album is everywhere albums are, and it's called Unknown.
It's called Unknown. It came out on August 4th. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So just because this is, we're only
2 weeks ago today.
Yeah. So, and this will, this, so you guys, it's probably streaming. It's part of your Prime package. Get on it.
Oh, yeah. So, get on it.
Yeah. Very exciting. Welcome to the program. I love your list of dorkdoms because they always... I enjoy... What's with the Loch Ness? The Loch Ness Monster. Let's hear it. Why?
I've just been... Why, huh? I guess I would ask, why not?
Like, why? Fair enough.
Why is not everybody spending every waking moment just Googling this thing and like just standing by the side of the lock? I mean, anytime a show comes on about this, it doesn't matter what time it is. I mean, they typically come on like in the wee hours of the night.
What if you're just flipping channels and you see it? Will you stop?
I just freeze. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's video, if it's literature. If I see Loch Ness printed anywhere, I'm like, turn around. We've got to go back.
Go back. Find out. Did they find it? And yeah. What? So the Loch Ness is an actual swimming pool or body of water in Scotland, right?
In Scotland, right. And yep, and it's been known for years that somewhat people have seen this. You know, people think it's a plesiosaur, one of the dinosaurs from like, you know, with the long neck.
And sure, sure.
That maybe got frozen during, you know, all of that jazz and then right. Going back out. You know, that's my theory.
Right, that's your theory. Is that like Captain yeah. America, frozen in the ice?
Exactly.
Thought of.
Yeah, they turned the oven up to 350 and thawed them out. And then
all of a sudden, everything started working again. I did just see a documentary where there's a frog that goes into hibernation that literally freezes over his eyes in the Arctic or Antarctic. It was some national park. And the damn thing's dead. And then comes spring, it thaws out from the inside of itself out and then has like a month and a half to procreate and then back to the cave to freeze up again.
To freeze up again.
Maybe it's like that. Maybe it's like that.
Possibly. Huh. I mean, literally anything about pretty much anything Loch Ness or like animal monster in the water. Like
what in the water? So do we know?
Yeah.
Do we know how long people have been supposedly seeing the Loch Ness Monster? Is it 100 years?
I want to say about 100 years, I think. And okay. They say the first guy who saw was like a respected physician in the area. And that's the reason that people kind of, you know.
Has any credibility. Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's cameras. So people.
There's cameras.
Has anyone?
Well, I guess back then it was those big cameras though, like with the light bulb explodes. So
right.
It probably took a while to set up.
You had a long time to set up, and you had to say to the monster, "Please don't move."
Don't move. Right. Can we do one more? You blink that time. Right?
So, do you know how deep the Loch Ness is?
I can Google it.
Yeah. So what have you seen that made you go, like, is it just the idea that there's giant monsters that will one day kill us all? That whole what are they going to do when they become sentient? What's going to happen?
For me, it's just the fact I love knowing or thinking that there's like mystery in the world still. Like, you know, everything is so connected and technological and everything's instant.
Right.
And you feel like we know everything, but like, it's just cool knowing that it might be a big ass monster.
Oh, do you think you know everything? I don't think you do.
Right.
Have you been to Northern Canada where the Bigfoot is? Yeah.
I have been to Canada. I haven't been like up near where they say they've had sightings and stuff. I've been like Toronto.
Right. It's hard to go to old town Toronto and hope to see a Bigfoot.
Right.
I would actually like to see a Mountie. That would be they seem mysterious.
I've never seen one either.
I've never seen a red suited on a horse, Dudley Do-Right, pad around Mountie. But
that
supposedly they still exist somewhere. Yeah. Have you ever been to Scotland? Uh-oh, you just got kicked off.
Okay.
Uh-oh, and you're kicked back up. That was your phone carrying too much. Yes, I'm back.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Have you ever been to Scotland?
Okay. I've never been to Scotland. I haven't, no.
When you go to Scotland, will you go?
Absolutely. Like, I've got kids. I've got three little boys. I've got an 8-year-old son and then twin 6-year-olds.
Wow, and that is a lot of boy energy. Holy smokes.
That's a lot of boy energy. But when I say they know their daddy, like they're really into like that stuff too. Like, you know, any type of like stuff you see about like large crocodiles or any type of like, there's a show called River Monsters that comes on
Okay.
Guy named Jeremy Wade, and he like catches all these huge fish in like the Amazon River and stuff.
Okay.
So anytime the kids see anything about the Loch Ness or anything, like, they're like, "Daddy, come on, it's on!" Like,
because they know that you wish to see it.
Okay. To see it, right?
You with small children, you probably have Disney Plus. Am I correct?
Oh, my kids are literally upstairs in my bedroom right now watching Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief on Disney.
Okay.
Plus.
On Disney yeah. Plus, there's a National Geographic series about the national park system. That's where I found out about the frog that freezes to death. That was that was either the Arctic or the Antarctic. Geography is, again, not my strong suit. Whatever it is, it's the one that's there's a U.S. Alaska National Park. That's where the frog is. There is also another episode that's about the Everglades in Florida. And that has the coolest crocodile, alligator, whatever the hell, giant beastie. You got to watch. Right. Those are gorgeous.
Okay.
They're a little murdery for kids, but kids love murder sometimes. So it's just like wolves pulling down a fawn you'll see occasionally.
Okay. But like biting out frogs and stuff.
Yeah, not that bad. Not that bad, but an occasional... Okay. This is the wild. That's what I tell my nieces and nephews. This is not an excuse for you to murder anyone.
Anybody,
You can go to the grocery store and just buy food. You don't have to do this, but that is not an option here with these animals. Okay.
Absolutely.
So they might like that. You might like that because it's the alligator.
All that
crazy
stuff,
in the Everglades. Crazy.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to check it out.
Okay. And There's your Bigfoots and your Loch Ness. I look at my notes.
Bigfoot, Loch Ness. Me and my older brother, we do feel as though we saw a Bigfoot when we were children. This is over outside of Washington, D.C., where my grandmother lived. So I live in Baltimore. D.C. is about an hour away.
Okay.
And there's a huge forest that backed up to my grandparents' property. And it was a stream down there, like a little body of water, and then you crossed over the stream, and it was just woods as far as you could see.
Wow.
And we used to beg our parents to go down there and, like, you know, throw rocks and catch crayfish and all that stuff.
Yep.
And we went down there one day, and literally as soon as we got down there, we heard, like intense, like, rustling through the tree line.
Sure.
And then, I promise you, we called it Monkey Boy, me and my older brother. And we still swear to that. There was a large falling out from the community.
How tall was this? Yeah.
Monkey Boy, I'm saying, I was probably fourth grade, and my brother was probably sixth grade. But from what we remember, we think that Monkey Boy is probably about 11 feet tall.
11 feet tall.
And 11 feet tall. So we ran back up to the house and ran back up to the house like so excited, like we were crying. Like out of breath, telling my parents, like, we saw the Monkey Boy in the woods.
There's a giant Monkey Boy.
My grandmother's like,
don't
calm
miss
down,
it.
Baby, calm down. Yeah.
And your parents were like, oh, it's just one of those guys that's hiding porn in the woods. Let's go roust. Let's go beat the bushes. I grew up in Wisconsin, and there was a place called Rawson Woods, and you could go and hang out there. And the boys, you would occasionally find hefty bags full of porn, and then or magazines or whatever. I one time saw what very possibly could have been a Monkey Boy. This was an adult man with a trench coat who wasn't wearing any clothes on underneath his coat. And it was some sort of caricature of a flasher. And I was in fifth or sixth grade. I was like, yeah, that's a monster. I'm going to run away from it. So we let that go.
Let that one go. Right.
Yeah. So have you taken your children on like a camping, like, would you go looking for?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if I would like actively go out and like set up cameras on the trees. And, like,
don't you think they should do that? Like,
I've seen that on some episodes of like, it's a show called Finding Bigfoot. And,
yeah.
Like these guys, and they strap these thermal cameras to the trees at nighttime.
Yeah.
To catch thermal imaging and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I would totally take my kids to,
just a normal,
just adventures. Like,
right.
We spend a lot of time in the woods now, like, you know, just hiking and like climbing over stuff and, you know, lifting up huge rocks and looking for lizards and.
Oh, just kind of just literally doing what children should be doing, which is wandering the woods, not staring at a screen as much as possible, even though it's not particularly possible right now. So, yeah, that's awesome because I like your love of Home Depot, I think, mixes into this.
Don't bring up Home Depot. What's touching me in my heart? Nah.
Well, how do you know? I've been to a Home Depot. As far as I can tell, people work at a Home Depot. I've seen them in the distance.
Right.
I can't find any guy or woman with an orange vest on to talk to me. How do you do it?
Every time you get close, they disappear. Right.
Bam. They're gone.
Just gone. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I do a lot of research on my own. So typically when I go in the store, I know what I'm going for.
Okay. Do you go with like a floor layout where you're just I know what?
So I've got a Home Depot app on my phone, which has you type in your zip code and it shows you a store layout of your local store.
Oh, this is a huge reveal. This is a really okay.
And it gives you like the aisle number, like it'll say like A, bin 30, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. So it's very rare that I have to like look for somebody like the Bagger Vance employee.
Right. Well, because do you ever need somebody to saw a piece of wood? Do you ever need that?
I have once, and it took 45 minutes to locate somebody.
Yeah.
Just kept paging Mr. Charles. Charles, please come to Millwork. Mr. Charles was nowhere to be found.
Mr. Charles was taking a lap and didn't want any part of it.
Definitely.
They are so huge. Do you ever just browse? Do you browse at the Home Depot?
I do. I like the smell of it.
Okay.
I like the smell of, I don't know, I guess it's the building materials.
It is. It's wood and oil and just sort of weird packaging. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, my father and my grandfather, they were all kind of handy. So I grew up kind of fiddling in tool sheds and stuff.
Ooh,
so I think I find, go ahead.
Do you know how to hang a door?
I do.
What? This is amazing.
I do know how to hang a door. I do light electrical work. I put up ceiling fans. I do some plumbing.
Interesting.
And a lot of it's just trial and error. It's just me literally like screaming to my wife, like, shut the water off. Shut the water.
I love that. Yeah, here, what I'm hearing is a willingness that I don't have. I have a willingness to somehow find $300 so I could call a dude.
I got you.
But there is a sense of accomplishment. Like if you can.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like I got some projects in the yard that I'm doing right now.
What are you doing?
Cutting out some like 4x4 sections of wood that we're putting down to kind of make a defined walkway.
Okay.
Yeah, so that, and then we got some painting projects going on. Just painted a fence.
Very Huck Finn. Yep.
Yeah, very Huck Finn. It's something peaceful about that to me. Like, I don't know, it's just something, it's away from everything.
I have that with gardening sometimes where I just, because I have a vegetable garden, and I just, there's something about rooting around in the garden. I do tend to neglect it. Like I get that piece and then I forget about the piece that I get from fiddling diddly. But if I do it, there's a sense, first of all, fresh tomatoes. You can't really go wrong. And then the fiddling diddle of actually planting and weeding and making sure everybody's, you know, getting enough water. There is a certain amount of peace to that. You're making a sort of a walkway among the yard?
We kind of got some steps to kind of go down from the back of the house, but then it kind of just flattens out into the grass. So,
okay.
Just kind of extending the walk.
What if you needed to move a wheelbarrow? That would be, now you would have, you're going to have a hard surface that will be easier than sort of muddy grass. Exactly. So how about, do you have the right tools? This is always the question. Do you kind of collect them?
I do. Like I've got a huge tool collection. We actually were getting to the point now where the house is getting too small for the family. Tools, right. Most of my tools are like inside of like Tupperware containers, like those tubs and stuff.
Right, right.
I've got the stuff that I can get to quickly, to my screwdrivers and tape measuring saws and stuff and caulk, all that type of stuff.
caulk is always, yeah, that'll fix stuff.
I will caulk any damn thing.
caulk is the fancy man's duct tape.
They should print that on the tube.
That it is true. By the way, I am talking with Jason Weems, who is at Jason Weems Comedy Instagram, at J Weems Comedy on Twitter, and has a comedy special you should go watch on Amazon called Unknown. So yeah. Now we all know that. Now this also leads into it. We can get into like the other one that I know nothing about, but the whole idea that you love a Post-it is funny.
Not like a good Post-it note. Now what? Yeah. Post-it note. Anybody you talk to anybody who knows me like intimately, my family, my wife, like if you see like a nice set of Post-it notes, people will be like, "Oh, Jason would love that."
Have you been gifted Post-it notes?
I have. My wife used to give them to me all the time when we first started dating. Aww. And it's what I first started writing jokes on.
Oh, okay.
When I first started stand-up, I used to carry those pads in my pocket. This is like really before like cell phones really got big or people using all their notes like that.
Well, you don't have like a notebook?
I do, but it's something about, I used to like having the little squares because then when I would like construct a set, I could like stick them on the wall in individual pieces.
Oh, you would storyboard your set.
Right.
With Post-it notes.
Yeah.
Do you like a standard yellow or what do you mix it up?
My addiction started off with yellow, but then it moved into the greens and the blues. Sure. I've got some purple ones that I'm enjoying quite a bit right now. smells like a lavender. Beautiful.
It's very beautiful. You saving any? Are there any that are just have anything that you're saving?
Yeah, I save all. Well, you mean like and not write on them? Or?
Right, exactly. Like not. Are there any that you're saving? You're like, this is gonna be.
No, I haven't found one that I've said that I won't write on.
Okay, good. I don't know why.
Every one that I've ever written on, I've kept. I mean,
so like, how do you keep them? They don't keep their stick, do they?
I used to put them in. So when I first started, even before I started comedy, I was such a fan of it, but I was scared as hell to do it. But I was writing these jokes or what I thought were jokes or ideas, but then I would sort them out. I'm a real big neat freak. I like organization.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would literally have shoeboxes under my bed, like old Nike boxes. With gallon Ziploc bags stuffed with Post-it notes, and they were categorized. So I had like a family bag, a sports bag, relationship bag. And my parents actually thought I was selling drugs.
Because you needed so many baggies. You're like, he's running through the sandwich bags. He must be selling drugs. No, I'm collecting Post-it notes.
By
category. I was going to ask if you ever transcribe them into a notebook or onto the computer. Do you ever transcribe your jokes?
I try to at some point. I mean, when I say it's so many, it's such a back. I would have to hire somebody to
care.
Type them in. But I do want to do that. That's like a passion project, like further down the road to like get all of these things typed up and put into a book.
Yeah, that'd be so you have them by essentially it's a filing system, but with baggies and Post-its inside of baggies. So if you are like, I wrote a joke about dogs. I know I did. So you go into one of these bins and you find the animal bag or the dog bag, and then you just go through them, because that'd be an interesting way to be reminded of bits that you had lost. Like you were like, oh, this never went anywhere. Do you use a standardized size, or are we using the tiny ones and the long ones?
Oh yeah, this is like this size right here, like those.
Oh, that is a standard. That's a standard square.
And as you see here, I have to pay Eric, and I have to tell him This is the guy who cuts my grass.
Okay. Yeah. Don't forget to pay Eric. Fair enough.
Yeah. So your post-it notes are great. I love greeting cards. Like blank greeting cards.
The ones that have the picture, you open it, says nothing.
It's just nothing, right? Like, I get, like, I mean, just real, like, really nice with designs, and Papyrus makes really nice ones.
Oh, yeah, they do.
With, like, a little fancy gold sticker that you put on the back. And I like to just sit down and write, like, a good handwritten sentiment to people. Like, that's
That's awesome.
Like, I mail cards to all my family for, like, birthdays and Christmas and, like, write individual messages.
That's awesome. Were you taught as a child to do thank you cards? Do you think it might have come from that, or
my mother and my grandmother, or my mother's side of the family in particular, are extremely thoughtful people.
Right. That's so funny, because it sounds like you're casting aspersions by the others, but you're not, because it's really actually quite difficult to be a thoughtful person, and so it is kind of surprising to be raised by people who are incredibly thoughtful.
So I saw that from them, like you said, like somebody would send a gift and then they would go out and buy a gift because they got them a gift. It's just going back and forth in the mail.
Yes, I was raised by monsters. But what I love about could have been worse. But my stepmother was very funny, because she was always like, well, you have to write a thank you card. And I was like, ugh. And she's like, fine, you have to write a thank you card, because you will not get any more gifts from this person unless you write a thank you card. So that is why you have to write a thank you card. Right? And it was like, can I make it about you? Yeah, there you go. Now go write a freaking thank you card. Yeah. And so it came to pass. But it was an excellent lesson, because because eventually you could, I mean, empathy, I think, could be taught. For the rare person who is born with empathy, that's beautiful. The rest of us, bit of a learned skill, I think.
It is a learned skill.
And I'm willing, sure. I'm not a monster. I can learn things. All right. So you got great. What are your? You have a stationery deal. What just happened? I love that. I'm just reading this now.
I was saying I want to be the first comedian with a stationery deal. You know, everybody has tennis shoes and all these clothes. Yeah. So I want a deal with post-it notes, like a straight up endorsement deal. Where the commercials, I'm like writing jokes. I'm putting this into the universe. So if you're listening, I said it first on the Jackie and Cashier podcast.
Exactly. So, dear 3M. Yes.
Yeah.
Attainable goal, I think. Why not? Because it's that there is there's a greeting card company that I submit jokes to. And then they print the cards up. They've only done two of mine. And you could either get this. The deal was they could either pay you $500 for they get it in perpetuity, whatever witty birthday thing you wrote. And or you could get a royalty deal. And then you would get like 12 cents a thing forever. And I was like, oh, please just give me the $500. I can't imagine. And I can't imagine this is going to be a thing.
It's a slow death. Yeah.
But it's so funny. Every year they send me a breakdown. They're like, this is what you would have gotten in royalties. And I was like, very passive aggressive. Well played.
Yeah. Yeah. What's it up to? Do you know? Is it like past $500?
It is past $500, actually.
Okay,
So they are just trying. I mean, the thing is when I submit, they just are like, just do the thing where we don't have to come up with $500 right away.
Exactly.
That's like it's all about lateral income. And but I like postcards a fair amount. And some people like a nice stationery with stickers. Do you have a sticker? Do you like a sticker?
I do like a nice sticker.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons I love the Papyrus card so much. It comes with a nice gold embossed. It's like raised.
Right.
It's like a peacock. Yeah. And you kind of push it to the back of the card on the envelope. It makes it feel like it's one of those old, like, wax seals.
Yeah, the ring that you drop a little wax and then you put it. I was always curious that they never burned their fingers.
I know they did.
Yeah, some of them had to initially until they learned the trick of it. Sort of right. like starting a grill. Anyway, yeah, you like physically writing over typing. Do you? Because I don't do much. I don't do much comedy set lists on my phone okay. either.
Right.
Just because
yeah, I like
think
to, even not just comedy per se, just in general, if I'm writing my to-do list, if I'm writing anything that means anything to me, huh. it feels like it's not real until I put it in ink.
Okay.
Until I physically have that motion of my hand moving and touching the paper and the pen, it doesn't feel real when I'm on a keyboard.
What are you going to do when they want you to write a book?
Get a whole bunch of those long yellow legal pads.
Right, the legal pad ones that also stick. And the
exactly.
large, you're going to have to use gallon baggies. Because I it's interesting. Some people do still write, you know, they use either an old-timey typewriter or
right.
or hand write like the great, you know, the great American novel or some memoir thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think you would write a book longhand?
I would at least try.
Okay.
I would definitely try. Because I know I feel more creative when I'm writing longhand compared to typing.
Okay. Yeah.
Even with jokes, I've tried an exercise before. You know how when you're first hit with that energy of a new idea and you're like, oh, yeah. let me go write this down.
Yeah, yeah.
I've tried before when I've written it by longhand.
Mm-hmm.
And then take it to the stage. And then I try to, when I type it into my phone, and then take it to the stage. And I'm not sure if it's a mental thing, but it feels like the ones that were written longhand have a higher success rate.
I find that's interesting. And I find that if I type it out, I can't, like I can, with my crummy penmanship, I
yeah.
can get more of the idea down faster if I just
mm-hmm.
write it out. And I
yeah.
can lose things if I'm typing it on my phone. Even though
yeah.
I type pretty good, pretty fast on the phone, I get more of the organic feel of what the bit's going to be about in those two sentences for some reason.
Exactly. And that's always what I'm chasing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about pens? Do you like a nice pen?
I do like a nice pen. Now, I feel like as I'm getting older, I feel like my desire and want for those is going to increase.
You may become a pen collector. You know, like some people collect
like
watches.
Like,
yeah.
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 I also, I'm a watch guy, too. I have a fair number of watches. Not like something insane, but I probably
right.
got like 12 watches, something like that.
I have three, and I feel like that's too many because I just got the two wrists. And what is there a brand? Did you go by brand or did you go by look?
Oddly enough, I went by brand initially, mm-hmm. but all that brand just by chance always had my favorite look too.
Okay, because
so
I used
most of my watches are Fossil.
I was gonna say. Because I like the idea of the I have a Fossil and then I have a Seiko
yeah.
because I didn't
because
okay. Seiko Fossil didn't make, you know what I wanted? I wanted a lady watch. I wanted a delicate lady watch because I wanted to do something here to make it more delicate and ladyish. because the Fossil I had, what I like about it has a nice big face on it. So you can
right.
see what time it is when you're doing a set, right? It's easier.
Yeah, yeah.
The Seiko has a super clear, much smaller face, but you can see
mm-hmm.
all the numbers super clearly as well, which is
right,
literally
right.
what, like, what are you wearing one right now? No, we're in a no
yeah,
watch zone.
Watchless right now. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
A good watch is nice. I love a good pair of shoes.
Okay.
Shoes and watches. For clothing items, shoes and watches are my thing.
My husband says he is often disappointed by the lack of ways that men can be fashionable. And there's really, it's just watches and shoes. And
right.
he always wears, there's an Italian, he wears red shoes all the time. Red leather shoes. And the
okay.
current brand that he's wearing is an Italian brand called Brutini. which may
I
or may
not. I've heard of Brutini before. That name sounds familiar for some reason.
Here's a weird thing. So he bought a bunch of, he got like these, there. He has several pairs. He got a blue pair to go. When we got married, he wore this amazing suit that had a stripe down the side, kind of like Han Solo, kind of like a marching band situation.
I understand. Yeah.
And, but he bought three different pairs of shoes to try on because it's over the mail and you got to try them on. And so he's sitting around with my dad, Elliot Cation, 83 years old, aging horn dog. Yes. And he is a delightful man in many ways, but he is also very dapper, super dapper. And they were talking about shoes. And my dad was, my husband, Andy, was like, why, whenever I go to order shoes, all of the models are black men. Why are there no white men that are modeling these cool shoes? And my dad says, because they don't take care of them. That's why. Black men take care of their shoes. And I was like, wow, that is sweeping. That is a sweeping statement.
Yeah, it's a sweeping statement.
But I don't know. It's not rude. So,
that's not a rude thing, right? Yeah,
it's a positive. It's a positive statement. Andy takes care of his shoes. Yeah. And he couldn't be whiter. We did that 23andMe thing, and he found out that he's 99% white guy.
It just said that on the paper, white guy.
Yeah, he was just like, welcome to the British Isles. You're 99% British. I was like, all right,
hilarious.
Man. All right, good for you. But it was hilarious. So what kind of shoes do you do, a dress shoe or do you do a sneaker?
I like a little bit of all. I've got a few nice pairs of dress shoes. I've got some straight sneakers. I've got some kind of like hybrids. It's kind of like a casual that looks like it. You can wear it with like a nice pair of jeans, you know, like a button-up shirt or something.
Right, like a Saturday night show where you get a sort of a special sneaker. I myself have a special show sneaker that
I
wear.
What it is.
Uh-huh. They're Vans, and they're the Avenger Vans.
Nice.
Adidas had an amazing pair of Captain Marvel Adidas sneakers that were sold out within moments, and now they're $900.
Oh wow!
But I'm good. I don't. Yeah, I'm fine.
I can't do that. Yeah,
I don't need that.
Shoes. I don't pay like over like $70. Like anything over $70 is like.
It's a special treat. If it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's, I've spent, I think I've, I, you know, that's how I know that I'm rich now, is because I bought, these are just walking shoes, but they're super comfortable. Okay. I just showed you my shoe. But the,
flexing on me.
Sure. Well, I'm going to show you this. And I think that they're like, I don't know. They're literally walking. They're nothing fancy. They're just walking shoes.
Yeah.
But I liked them so much that I went back to buy them, and they said they were being discontinued. And I bought two more, and they're each $75.
Okay.
And yeah, so I bought two pairs of $75 shoes, and I was like, yeah, I must be fabulously wealthy now because I don't care, and I get to buy.
Right.
It's fancy shoe time, I guess, in my twilight years.
But when you find a pair of shoes that you like, you got to get more than one pair. Like,
because they change them all the time.
All the time. And it's always the stuff that you like that they discontinue.
Yeah.
Everything else is available. Yes.
Do you go with... I'm back to your shoe collection. Do you go with a black dress shoe, a brown dress shoe, or do you like to make them pop?
Mm-hmm. I like brown is typically my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my favorite suits are like navy blue and like even some grays that work well with brown.
Nice. And are they a wingtip? Are they a wingtip or are they just a straight?
I've got an assortment. I've got some that's got a rounder toe. I've got some with a wing on it.
Sure.
Yeah, I like to mix it up because you never know what you're going to get into.
I love it. And when you do that, because you have several watches, now I need to know what color is your wallet?
I have a brown wallet. It's like a...
Leather?
Like a caramel leather.
That's interesting.
It's like blue lining. It has blue lining.
Oh, okay.
Like white polka dots. It's lovely. Okay.
It's a beautiful. It's a beautiful item.
It's a beautiful piece. Yeah.
The Dork Forest is full of people that will tell me at length what their opinions are about these items. And one of my brothers does not enjoy a brown wallet or brown shoes. He'll only do a black shoe and a black wallet, and the wallet's got to match the shoe, and he's out of his mind. It's fine. I nothing but support. But I like, and he has a huge problem with anyone who carries a Velcro wallet. He's like, what are you, 8 years old, going to soccer? Yeah. What's happening?
And I've got a problem with that too. Just the that's a terrible noise. I've got this guy's
lunch is on me. Yes. It is not a good sound. Yes. So yeah. None of us have had any reason to dress up or in the last 5 months, which is fine by me. I tend to wear a suitcase. Yeah. I tend to wear a sackcloth and ashes anyway. But have you done any sort of dressing up? Have you tried to make quarantine kind of?
Not really. Just kind of, it is. Michelle Obama said this in her DNC speech last night, but it is what it is. So,
it certainly is.
Yeah. I've been wearing a lot of track pants, track pants, and like basketball shorts.
Sure.
That's mainly the outfit. I mean, T-shirts, I haven't ironed anything since like March, maybe 14th, something like that.
Sure. That mid-March is when we all came off the road.
Right.
And we're all seeing each other from this. So there's absolutely, like, I'm literally wearing cargo shorts, which should not have happened since 1999. And they're not even mine. They were my mother-in-law's.
Okay. So, she left them out cold.
I got several pairs. It's a long story. But, but that would be kind of like, because, you know, sometimes we, to jazz up a night here in the in the Cache and Ashcraft home, we like to sometimes get in the car, go through the drive-thru at the ice cream store. And literally, that has been the night out. And the rest of, that's, we haven't really, we've gone for walks, and we sit in the backyard a fair bit, but that's, and we're lucky to have a backyard. Yeah.
Amen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Us too. We've got a beautiful yard here and we live in the city, but I mean, for the city, we've got a big, big yard for our area.
So, I mean, so the kids can play catch.
Yeah. All that jazz.
That's cool. I went for a walk today in our neighborhood and someone had bought a giant blow up like yard pool and their yard their yard wasn't any bigger, and our yard isn't particularly big, but it would fit. Right. It would take up a good portion of space, but it might be kind of nice to have a...
Something.
Yeah, I'd just sit in the water. I don't know.
Right, yeah.
Well, here we are. Now, the thing is I am, of course, talking to Jason Weems, Jason Weems Comedy on Instagram, at J Weems Comedy on Twitter. The album and the special are both called Unknown on Amazon, if you want to watch the special. And then everywhere where you listen to an album would be where you'd listen to that album. And then I am willing to go here just because this cannot... Yes. It's always a bad... I don't know anything about music. So Jay-Z is your favorite.
Yeah.
Was one of your favorite singers or your favorite?
He's as far as hip hop goes, I think he's the greatest of all time.
Okay.
I will argue with anybody in any setting. It doesn't matter. Church, funerals, mitzvahs, proms, it don't matter.
The top of the Empire State Building in a romantic moment.
It does not matter.
Okay.
Right. And I have. I've argued with people in several locations.
Who's telling you this isn't so? He seems to be very successful. I don't know a lot.
He's very successful. But the argument, anytime when you argue about hip-hop, the counter-argument is Biggie or Nas are typically the guys who get thrown around as far as being either better than him or... And at that point, it's like a jump ball. It's a matter of opinion and...
You just got to everybody just respect each other. Step away from the topic.
Step away from the topic. my oldest son is named after Jay-Z.
Oh, really?
My first my firstborn, Jay-Z's real name, his government name is Sean Carter.
Okay. Oh, do you name him Sean?
My oldest son's name is Sean, and his middle name is actually from Biggie. Biggie, Notorious B.I.G.,
right.
Another famous Brooklyn rapper. His first name was Christopher.
Okay.
So my son's first name is Sean Christopher. Is what his first name is.
See, the only introduction, and this is not the old, every 3 or 4 years I'll buy another hip hop album. So, but yes. In 1989, I bought my first hip hop album, and it was KRS-One.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am a snob for that guy because I liked, and then I listened to every rapper that he mentioned for 3 years.
I got you.
And then I stopped listening to hip hop at about 92. Many years went by, and then I think I bought a Common album or a Lupe Fiasco. But initially it was KRS-One, and then Big Daddy Kane, who is not particularly political at all, but Romance with No Finance is a damn nuisance. Mm-hmm. Still speaks to us
absolutely.
All.
Absolutely, amen.
but the things. So Jay-Z, when did he start again? Was it late 90s?
So Jay, his first album dropped in 96.
Okay. That was the dead years. Yeah, those were the dead years for me. That's what my problem is. Yeah.
Exactly, right. So 96 is when he dropped, and he had just the work ethic that I identified with. He started kind of like mid-20s as far as when his first album came out. So, I mean, a little bit older than some folks, you know.
Okay.
But the way that he worked was almost like in dog years. So, I mean, every year he would drop an album. Every summer there was a Jay-Z album. So 96, 97, 98, 99. 2000.
Wow.
And he just did this relentlessly.
Just cranking it out.
Yeah, and it wasn't like the albums were bad. You know how sometimes when the rate of production is that high, quality stuff.
Yes.
It's like, how much have you grown in the last 11
right.
months?
Right. It's those comics who put out an album every year and you're like, oh man, this could have used another 6 months, my friend. Anyway, so, but Jay-Z, no?
Yeah. No, it always seemed like he was able to tap into past experiences with a level of detail that made it feel like, I mean, this guy's storytelling skills are just out of this world. I mean, the way that he bends words, the way that he uses, sometimes it's him taking a pause or leaving a word out, which makes the thing rhyme. You know,
okay.
Sometimes it's the noise, he'll make a noise in between a verse. Sometimes it's, you know, it's a lot of, you know, different theatrical and it's a lot of skill set that goes into it. That, I mean, and then just his the presentation.
This is the best explanation because that one of the things I like about hip hop is the storytelling, but there's also these musical things that he has to know where the pausing and the musical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he his own DJ? I know that this is common knowledge. Who's his DJ? I don't know.
Well, his producer is a guy named Guru.
Okay.
He's been associated with a couple of different DJs over the years. I mean, it's not so much like, you know, back when rap first kind of kicked off in the, you know, 80s and stuff, typically the rapper had a DJ. Like,
it was,
you know,
just
Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff or whoever you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
So Jay doesn't have a situation like that.
He collaborates with a bunch of different people?
He collaborates with, different people. Jay is one of those guys who, and typically I have a Jay, my wife jokes me all the time that I have like a Jay-Z verse for any circumstance. And like if something happens, like, oh, here he comes, because I always got something that kind of makes sense.
Some lyrics that just speak to you for that moment. What do you got anything right now? What's playing in K. Jason Weems right now?
As far as music or?
Yeah. Well, just, like if you were to, is there ever, like whenever anyone mentions hip hop, I consistently think of a KRS-One song about the cops.
Okay.
Do you
say You said, did I have one for?
For Jay-Z. Like when someone...
Just like a song that always blows my mind there.
Yeah. Or commonly.
I mean, my favorite Jay album, it was Reasonable Doubt, which was his first album. It came in 96. It was that album for quite a bit of time. But then he just released an album, I want to say probably about 2 years ago. It's called 444.
Okay.
And I'm somebody who believes in signs and believes in, you know, the universe speaking to you.
Loch Ness.
All that good stuff, right?
Sure. I'm a bit of a crystal clutcher myself, so I'm good.
And 444 is a number that's supposed to represent, you know, like good fortune. It's supposed to mean that you're like, you know, aligned with your path and all of those types of good things. And my kids know that anytime I see 444, I get really excited because it must mean that I'm where I'm supposed to be in any given moment.
Okay.
So it might be on the back of a license tag. It could be on a phone number, on a building.
That's a fun game for your kids, man.
Yeah, it really is. So, like, if you look through my camera roll of my phone, you'll see a lot of screenshots of 444. When I see that on my time, if I catch it, I'll screenshot it because I almost feel like I caught the good luck.
That's awesome. That was 444 great?
444 is amazing. It was literally, I mean, Jay-Z, what I've also loved about him, he's one of the only rappers that I, in my opinion, that has really matured with his music. I mean, you see the growth, when he got married to Beyonce, you know, elements of that started coming into his music. You know, when he had kids, that started getting into his music. And 444 is just a real... It's almost like spoken word, over a beat. It's very confessional. It's this is like right when Jay-Z and Beyonce were having like marital issues. So it's like really laced with a lot of like painful personal stuff. But it's just done in a way that I think is masterful.
Do you think that it because he started when he was 25, that he sort of had already grown up a little bit and was willing to sort of hear it?
I'm sure that had something to do with it. And I think just his lifestyle, just growing up, I think the environment that he came out of, it forced him to mature quickly and to become, I mean, you know, his father left when he was, you know, early on, you know, his uncle was killed in the streets and his father just really couldn't handle it. And basically kind of went out and was basically just looking, searching the streets for his uncle's or his brother's killer. You know, it just took him down a dark path and, you know, he just couldn't get back off of it.
It's interesting, you know, like when children are raised with that much sort of trauma with trauma and having to grow up so quickly, it can go in so many different ways. It can give you a sense of responsibility and you're like, I got to take care of the younger kids. I have to figure out how the remaining parent can be helped. I have to, I want to get out of this neighborhood, which was my brother, Russ. He's like, this town can fuck itself. I got to go. So I'm going to go to college. So it could do that, but it could also lead to, I have to stay here and be the king of this area to prove that this can be made to work, which can sometimes stagnate, you know, which is why we should all treat children like children, which are the precious items that they are, and allow them to be children and grow up.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, what the heck? I don't have any kids. I can say anything I want. I have 13 nieces and nephews, so full of opinions. But
absolutely.
So are you doing a lot of child care, like teaching of the kids?
Wife? And I used to teach school. So, I mean, for me, that's one of the blessings that kind of came out of this pandemic situation. I mean, it was thrown on us all, and all of us have been scrambling and trying to make the most sense of it. But at least I had some sense of how to, you know, read through a lesson plan or look at a lesson and pull out the key components
Yeah, that's huge.
All that type of stuff. So it's still difficult with three kids, and they're at different grades. Well, my twins are obviously in the same class, but my oldest, you know, so trying to split the time and trying to make sure everyone's, you know, getting what they need in an equitable way.
Right. So they don't feel ripped off. And but that is kind of amazing because you taught grammar school, right? You taught grade school?
I taught kindergarten for 10 years. And then a few other grades before I retired from teaching, probably 14 years in. And that's right when I started stand up while I was teaching.
Okay.
And my whole thing was once I could replace my teaching salary with comedy, I was going to dip.
That is gutsy stuff too, because I was never able to quit until I was like, please just quit. Just quit the day job and believe in yourself. And eventually you just got to take the step and do it. And it turns out, God's not going to drop you. It's going to be fine. It'll be fine. You'll figure it out. We're adults. And I've never been against going back to a day job. You know, I'll always do stand up. Whenever I meet a comic who's like, I could never have a day job, I was like, you have thumbs, right? Right? You could answer a phone.
Right.
What do you mean you couldn't do it?
Couldn't. Right. Yeah. I've definitely never completely closed off that part of my mind. You know,
yes, which I think
anything can happen. So
okay,
I like to stay flexible.
So we are pushing an hour. I will say that, and I would, but I like the idea of looking up Reasonable Doubt, which is his first album, and this 444 is that his last album? Or has he had one since?
That is the last one that he's released. 444.
Yeah.
That'd be
a good way to see the sort of the arc of, you know.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite story song? I love that's why I sometimes love country music. Let There Be a Truck,
right,
and some lady that you're in
I
love
understand.
With. Yeah.
Yeah, there is. I'm trying to think what is one of my all-time favorites. There's so many. The title track from 444.
Okay.
Is amazing.
Okay.
Part story, part kind of like just confessional.
Okay.
But it's done in a very succinct way, and the way that he kind of puts it together, it flows real nice.
That's huge. That's huge. To be able to spend, you know, it's like stand-up where if you spend 25 years working on something, it's admirable to get better at it. And to be a more whole person as you go forward. And it sounds like he really is, which is kind of...
Yeah, the whole goal, I would think.
Yeah, and the whole genre gets a lot of guff, you know? So as being just sort of young, dumb, and stupid or broke.
Yeah. And Jay's one of these guys, I mean, he just got inducted to the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Awesome.
You know, any accolade musically that you can think of. Every large festival, whether it's international or domestic, I mean, he's done it. And I just think he's a guy that really, really has a clear idea of who he is.
Yeah.
And
which can get lost. It can get lost when you're making $1 billion or whatever, you know, when you're making this giant bag of money, you can, I mean, cause you look at, you know, you look at Ellen and you're just like, I take it she was a jackass, and you just surround yourself with, you know, everyone telling you you're right all the time and nobody telling you, well, sometimes you're not right. You know, you just need, someone to hold you. Yeah,
for sure. Absolutely.
It has been really great meeting you, Jason. This has been
great meeting you.
Yeah. We have gone from, the Loch Ness, you don't know, it could be real, Rangers, through to your love of Post-it notes at Home Depot, and of course, and then Jay-Z. I learned a little bit more about Jay-Z, which is always important.
Oh, cool, yeah.
So thank you so much for doing the show. Everybody, I'm talking with Jason Weems. It's at Jason Weems Comedy on Instagram, at Jason J.W. Weems Comedy on Twitter, and of course the album's called Unknown, and the special by the same name on Amazon. Thanks for doing the show. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?